Hello, everybody, and welcome to Partner School. My name is Scott Pollack. I am the co-founder and CEO of Furneo, and we are an education company for emerging partnership leaders. And during our Partner School events, we will seek to demystify the mysterious and the ambiguous topics that plague all too many partnerships professionals. You see, partnerships is an emerging field that is continuously evolving, and that means that the knowledge of how to be an effective partnerships leader doesn't live in a textbook. Instead, it's in the minds of the partnerships people who are doing the work every day. Now, I've been in partnerships for over 20 years, and one of the byproducts of doing something for a very long time means that you're getting old. And as I get up there in my years, I've been developing that old man thing when I wonder, what the hell are the kids all talking about? And one of the things that I keep on hearing about is nearbound. Everyone seems to be talking about nearbound. And perhaps, like many of you, I'm curious, what does that even mean? And that's why I am excited to be joined here by one of the progenitors of the nearbound concept, Jared Fuller. Jared is the co-founder and CEO of PartnerHacker and the chief ecosystem officer at Reveal. And in those capacities, he has been waving the flag about a nearbound future. So today, we are going to explore what nearbound is all about and what you need to know in order to be prepared for a new nearbound world. Jared, thank you for joining today. Let's jump right into the question that brought us all here. What is nearbound and why is everybody talking about it?
Well, first off, thanks so much, Professor Pollack, for bringing me to school here. It's always great to chat with you. Love these conversations and loved our convo that led to this one. I think that nearbound is very different than partnerships. And you might go, wait, what? How is it different? I thought you were just using nearbound as a replacement word for partnerships. And let me try to demystify this as simply as I can. Nearbound is based on what? It's based on the concept of a network and a network effect. And the innovation that came from these, what are called account mapping tools, I think it does a disservice to the technological innovation underneath it. We do not quite understand as an industry the degree to which a networked database, so not just your CRM, but the totality of all the CRMs in your network, in your ecosystem, in your partnerships, right? So these are all relevant words, can affect everything built on top of it. So today, what's built on top of your CRM? Sales, marketing, right? So like we do sales engagement, we assign accounts, marketing's passing things over. When that underlying data infrastructure changes and you're able to all of a sudden use nearbound data, right? So your partner's information, then all of a sudden we get to flip how all partner tech was used in prior generations versus today. Now, I'll give you a perfect example. Everyone on this call should know to some degree what PRM is, partner relationship management, right? PRM was built for a world where partners came to you, right? So these were channel or agency partnerships where they were generally or resellers, right? Or even referral, where partner programs were working the partner ecosystem and then PRM could manage the deal registration back to us. But let's be real honest for a second. Are any of your tech or ISV partners registering deals with you? Come on. There's no account executive that just sold one of your target accounts a month ago that's thinking, I need to go register this deal for my integration partner. No one does that. Your account executives don't do it. I know they don't. So why would you think that other account executives will? They won't. But guess what you can do? You can run nearbound plays. So what is nearbound? Nearbound are the plays that marketing teams can do to market with partners. Not partner teams, marketing teams. Nearbound sales, for example, are the plays that sellers can take to activate and work with partners. And I can break those down, but the reality is that nearbound is the vehicle by which, you know, outbound sellers do things with outbound accounts, right? Sellers do other things with inbound accounts. Well, let's assume that you've done a good job and you've got alignment with leadership. What the heck do sellers do with nearbound accounts? That's what nearbound is. What your sales team does to generate pipeline with partners, or what your sales team does to accelerate pipeline with partners. And we can go to nearbound success as well. So that's why I've generally referred to it as nearbound GTM. What are the plays that marketing teams can do, that sellers can do, and the success teams to do? So that way you stop acting like a partner-sourced revenue department that has a giant number on your head, and you start orchestrating as a strategy for every department. That's what nearbound is. And that's why it's catching on faster than any other category creation play I've been involved in. I mean, we have companies as large as HubSpot shouting the word nearbound. It was at Box Partner Day I mean, the word is catching on. And guess who it's catching on with, Scott? CROs, CMOs. I think because of the proximity to the words inbound and outbound, right? It forces that marketing and sales leader to start thinking about something more tactically practical than the totality of all things ecosystem and partnerships. It's too complex for them. But if we start talking about nearbound plays, nearbound, you know, marketing campaigns, nearbound sales plays, now all of a sudden we're having the conversation that we should have been having with our executives the entire time.
So, you know, you've referenced that nearbound is the future of go-to-market. You're kind of talking about it's not partnerships, it sits atop of partnerships. Maybe just help us put that into context. So if nearbound you consider to be the future of go-to-market, what was the past of go-to-market and why is nearbound the future?
Yeah, so I broke this down. It's ironic. The narrative fits in very well to, let's say, the Partner Hacker Manifesto that I wrote a year and a couple months ago. That's been read tens of thousands of times. Like, it really struck a nerve. And that Partner Hacker Manifesto was called Trust is the New Data, right? So Clive Humby in 2006 boldly proclaimed that data was the new oil. Well, data obviously was the new oil. Like, look at Salesforce's stock price from 2006 to 2022 or 2023, from Amazon's, right? Like, people made not just billions, but trillions off of data over the past 15, 16 years. So data was the new oil. Well, this decade, though, is precipitated by something fundamentally different. And that's that the way that we buy has fundamentally changed. It's absolutely changed. And I just did a podcast yesterday, Scott, with another Scott. This gentleman's name was Scott Leese. If no one knows who Scott Leese is, Scott Leese is one of the top five goats of VPs of sales in B2B tech or SaaS. Scott has six figures of following on LinkedIn and is widely respected as one of the best VPs of sales of all time. His community had about 38,000 people in his community. He had, you know, Thursday night sales. He's done a bunch of things. Surf and Sales Summit, where he builds really intimate connections with top VPs of sales and CROs. And what Scott was telling to me last night was that as a VP of sales, as a CRO, he believes that network and nearbound is the only lever left. That's the only differentiation is your network as a business and as an individual. And I'm like, shit, this is what I was saying a year and a half ago when I was launching Partner Hacker. I'm like, there's going to be a movement. Sales leaders are going to come over to our side. And what's resonated with Scott more than anything else? It's not the totality of partnerships. It's not about partner recruitment, right? It's not about partner engagement. It's not about partner activation. It's, hey, let's assume that we have some partners that are activated. Partner program, if you can't produce partners that care about us, you know, like, that's not the sales team's problem, right? But the sales team's problem is, hey, now we have some integration partners. We have some service partners. What the heck? Let's assume that we're aligned at the CRO level. What do we do? How do we get there? Well, this is where we go through the kind of the different eras. The outbound era was precipitated by what? It's the 2000s. The database, right? The database, the fact that we were able to take sales activities and make them digital. So we could send outbound emails, we could make outbound phone calls, and we could track them, right? So we now had an online cloud-based database. And then whenever everything got in the online cloud database, we entered the inbound era, the 2010s. So everything became automated, right? So we started to send, you know, programmatic ads out to people and emails based on what lists they sent in. And there was a lot of inbound marketing automation, content, nurture, get them in a list, right? Send them a, you know, drip journey with an ebook or whatever the heck it was, right? Now in the 2020s, we're in this nearbound era where there's too much data, there's too much automation, there's too much noise, and how we buy has fundamentally changed. And Scott recognized this too, Scott Leese. How we used to buy was based on words like how. We'd Google something. How do I do X? How do I do Y? What do I do with this? Now, what do you get if you go to Google and you search like, how do I do whatever? You get 14 SEO drivel like listicles that are just so unhelpful, that are clearly SEO optimized game garbage. I mean, look at the review sites. Is not every review of every product you see online 4.7 stars? If it's 4.5, there must be something totally wrong. If it's 4.9, it's clearly juiced. Like 4.7 stars or bust. Like, nobody trusts online information anymore, but we trust the people who've been to the places we want to go. That's why it's the nearbound era. It's not, we don't ask how questions, we ask who. Who has done the thing that I'm trying to do? Who's been to the places I want to go? So as a seller, you need a nearbound mindset to be able to go, I'm not just going to go attack this account. I'm going to surround this account with people they're already doing business with. I'm going to help them and I'm going to get intel back and I'm going to work this account by being with people that they already trust. So that way, when they say, you know, who should I look at for this solution? You're the name that comes up. So I think that we're in three different eras. It was the outbound era, then it was the inbound era. We're clearly in the nearbound era. Go to network, go to community, go to ecosystem, ecosystem-led growth, partnerships, this, that, whatever it is. The whole point of nearbound is to give you something tactical, though, that you can go do with your sellers, with your marketing people. And I think that's why it's the enter of a new era. Like, let's be honest. In 1 year, are your inbound channels or your outbound channels going to be performing better in 12 months from now than they are today? Let's take a really fucking honest answer here. They are not. There's no situation in which a CMO or a CRO can look me in the eye and say that in 1 year, my outbound and inbound channels are going to be performing better than they are today. Absolutely not. So that's why it's the nearbound era. You have to go to the people that have already done the thing that the customer is trying to do, who already have trust with that customer and work with them. And as a partner person, if you're not doing that with your marketing team, if you're not doing that with your sales team, then you're a siloed, individualized department and you're going to get cut. That's what's so different. We need to orchestrate this in these other departments.
If I could take it back a level. So just to kind of recap what I believe we're all hearing, what Nearbound is fundamentally is a way of taking the concept of partnerships and making it less about how many partners can I get and more about how can I infuse partnerships across the organization, enable my marketing, sales, et cetera, teams, so that partnerships is part of their strategy, infused across the strategy of the organization. That I get. Okay, you want to say about that?
What I would say is yes, and what I'm trying to articulate by speaking so passionately about this is that we need to recognize the moment that we're in.
Yeah.
2 years ago, we did not have this opportunity to make that big of an impact on the business, right? When we say the word partnerships or channel or alliances or business development or resellers or referral, whatever those other words are, they were not landing. They are not getting buy-in, right? Language has a network effect. And what I noticed with Nearbound is that CMOs and CROs start using it immediately. They go, okay, now we need to figure out our Nearbound strategy, right? It makes sense. My AEs work outbound accounts, they work inbound accounts. What the heck is it? Okay, partner accounts that are from a partner. Where, how do we proactively engage? We're asking the right questions. And my point is if you can align your strategy to do that across these different departments, we have the opportunity now more than we had even a year ago. Right? It's your time to shine. And I believe that just by talking about all things partnerships with each department, like the conversation with your CRO and your CMO should be different. It's not the same. You shouldn't be talking about partner recruitment with your CRO and your CMO. You really shouldn't. But you should be talking about what? Nearbound marketing and how to attach partners to more marketing campaigns. And you should be talking about nearbound sales and how to attach partners to more sales activities. Those conversations are tactical, right? To roll up to a strategic objective of, let's say, one third outbound, one third inbound, one third nearbound, right? That might be a best in class or healthy revenue mix, right? Your three major channels that can apply to social, they can apply to email, they can apply to calls, calendars, events, you know, anything. So that's what I would say is so important about this conversation and why I'm speaking so passionately to it is that we are at a moment where these conversations should be happening and they're more receptive than ever. Because why? Like I said, the other channels have stopped producing, period.
Yeah, I know. And I love one thing that you've been saying for a while now, the idea that partnerships is a strategy, not a department. And what I'm hearing is that Nearbound is a mechanism for infusing partnerships as a strategic imperative into the entirety of the organization. But I do want to ask you one specific question, which is, a lot of the language you're using about, you know, driving accounts and sales seems very much like it comes from the world of channel sales. And so what I would want to understand is what's different? Is this just new fancy language that is unto itself valuable to create the knowledge and thoughtfulness about partnerships in a sales department? Or is it just channel sales with another word?
I don't think it's channel sales with another word. And let me give you a very specific example. Channel is fundamentally different than partnerships. And if anyone wants to disagree on that, let's talk about it. Channel comes from the world of, let's say, telco, right? Where you needed local presence for distribution of hardware whenever you were selling giant, you know, let's say PBX systems, right? So you'd have an office tower and there's all these people, you know, top to bottom, and you needed all of this local servers and hardware to make phone calls, right? Or to do internet connectivity. Now everyone, I mean, literally you text someone and there's a, you know, 1 gigabit, 2 gigabit internet speed to your home, right? Like that world no longer exists. Now, there's still plenty of companies that have channel programs, but channel programs are actually business units. These are contractual relationships with an anticipated sell-through. And what's changed so much about channel versus today is that in 2012 or 2013, there were what? 400, 500 MarTech companies. Today, there's 12,000, right? There was maybe a few thousand ISVs. Today, there's 200,000. Your brain can't compute the exponentially different world that we live in, where channel and having a dedicated business unit, that means that you have a go-to-market operating model, Scott. And in that operating model, you have channel partners, and there's an anticipated what? Sell-through. You're actually booking the revenue for your sales team and your channel separately, right? Channel is about a partner that's committing to doing 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, 10 million, 100 million in sales. Right. And then you're putting channel marketing resources behind those partners. You're putting channel sales resources, channel enablement, you know, things like through channel marketing automation, which can be valid. But because there is so much choice, very few people, I mean, and Jay McBain's talked about this since 2019, the trifurcation of the channel, right? The non-transacting partners are now showing up everywhere in the buyer's journey. You know, so partner channel world is different than partner world, right? Partner world is a department where you're doing things that are a lot more amorphous, like, I don't know, co-marketing or building an integration or, you know, any number of different things like influence on the customer success side that is not tied to a sale or a transaction, right? So channel was about the transaction and point of sale. Partnerships, it was about a wider remit in terms of customer value, but it's kind of fluffy. And what ended up happening unintentionally is that the people from the channel background didn't necessarily translate to the partner background because they're like, how do I prove impact? You know, the CRO's up in my case to drive partner-sourced revenue, but we don't have a channel program, right? My partners are not signing up to do millions of dollars of revenue a year, even if you have the right tiering program. So that's the difference between channel and partnerships. What Nearbound is an evolution of partnerships. It's naming the actual plays that a sales organization can do with partners. So I'll give you a perfect example. I've signed reseller deals, and I would call that a channel, right? Because there's some commit. All right, you're going to do $1 million, right, of sales of my product over the course of the next year, right? So like I have gross margin on that. It's a dedicated line item. That's fantastic. But then let's say Sixth Sense and Drift, an ISV partnership that I built. We were doing, whenever I left, 6 co-sell deals a day, where our sellers were helping sellers at Sixth Sense and vice versa, you know, about averaged about 6 times a day. How do I report that as channel revenue? I can't. It's Sixth Sense had nothing to do with the transaction. They were referring deals. Yeah, they did occasionally, but they also weren't selling deals. They were influencing deals. They were introing us to new contacts. They were giving us intel about the accounts that we used to close the deal that we otherwise wouldn't have. And that's what I recognize. Hey, this thing that I'm doing with Sixth Sense is fundamentally different than channel, and it's the actual application of partnerships where sellers are doing the work. I had 55 sellers, Scott. How could I, with a partner team of 4 or 5 people, potentially have as much overlap and reach as my field organization of 55? Right? There's an average of an 8-to-12 ratio of individual contributors to partner people in most tech companies. Nearbound is about how you get these partnerships that you've already spent all this time activated into the hands of the people that are actually on the front line and own the majority of accounts.
So you've talked about a few different types of partners. I want to bring up a question that Tanner just asked. He asks about what types of partners are core to Nearbound. Is it tech partners, ISVs, as we talked about? Is it solutions partners and services companies, or is it agencies or all of the above?
We might skip ahead and then come back to this, Scott, because I know you wanted to get into this a little bit later. I've mentioned my three I's of like Nearbound sales plays, for example. So Intel, Intro, and Influence, right? Those are the three I's. And what I would say is what types of partners are best suited for these plays. For example, let's say you just signed an Accenture, right? A big four GSI. Do you want the totality of your sales team? And let's say you're able to get some, you know, overlap data with, some Nearbound network data with Accenture. Would you want your entire sales team trying to engage with Accenture? Well, if you haven't done that before and you go through it for the first time, you'll realize, no, you don't, right? Because Accenture will take any call and will waste all of your time to the umpteenth degree, right? You really need to understand what deals it's potentially viable to work with Accenture on, right? But you might just see that, Accenture just closed an opportunity, right, in the last month. Okay, that one's interesting, right? They just closed them. They have some influence, but everything else is an opportunity to Accenture. Like literally everything is an opportunity. You will see your entire customer base, you know, in the enterprise where Accenture has everything as an op and there's 20 people working per account. So could you use Nearbound data? Yes, you just have to be mindful about it. And you have to recognize, I just posted this on LinkedIn this morning, not all choices are equal, right? Like not all partners are equal, right? So the top 20% of your partners, right? The 80-20 rule that just exists, like don't fight it. It exists. It just is. It exists in pea pods. Right. It exists all the way to your partners. I promise. The Pareto principle applies everywhere. That 20% of partners, whether they're SI partners or tech partners, you absolutely should be running Nearbound sales plays with. Right. So it doesn't matter if they're agency. It doesn't matter if they're ISVs. Obviously, if they're ISVs, you're going to have more overlap. But a really healthy way to go about doing this in Nearbound is I'll give you like a really tactical thing you could do with Nearbound sales plays today. You pull up 360 mapping on a rep level. So Scott, we're talking about an account executive. Let's name a fake account executive. We'll call you Scott Pollock. He's the quota crusher, right? So you're account executive Scott, and I'm partner manager Jared. I sit you down and I say, hey Scott, let's pull up your list of your accounts. Let's say you have 100, and then we're going to sort that by the accounts with the most partner overlap, you know, most recently. So you might see your top 20 accounts out of that 100 have five or more partners where they have a closed customer that you're trying to reach out to. So now we've gone from 100 accounts and like, I don't know which accounts I'm going to work with partners to 20. Okay, great. Now of those 20, which partners are the best ones to go and work with? And we'll look at things like, oh, that they just became a customer of two of my integration partners in the last 2 months. Scott, do you think there was some buying intent or a business initiative that resulted in this account purchasing two pieces of tech that we integrate with in the past 2 months? Should we know what that business initiative is? Probably. Like, otherwise, what are we're going to just send cold outbound emails based on stuff on LinkedIn and their website? Like, how 2015? You know, 2015, like, not even all of us were on iPhones or Androids, right? Like, flip phones still existed. Come on. Like, we're in a whole different world now. So that account executive can then reach out to those integration partners and be like, hey, I noticed you just signed this customer, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm curious. This is what my value proposition was for this account, but I imagine you were probably selling into a business initiative that got this deal done. Could I perhaps learn more so that way I'm coming alongside what you felt was important to the customer? That's Nearbound. That's Nearbound selling. Isn't that different than channel? This is not about a partner bringing you a referral, right? It's not about a partner registering a deal. They would have never brought it to you, is my point. And as a partner manager, you would have never reached out to that partner about that account. Why? Because you can't go across 100 accounts times 50 or 100 reps and do that solo. You need the rep to do it, to prioritize it, right? And then make that connection. And you're just the facilitator, the orchestrator. So in the beginning, guess what? So Tanner, to answer your question even more tactically, you might be the liaison for every single one of those requests. Okay, this AE is trying to connect with this partner, is trying to connect with this partner. Then you get to a phase of maturity where you just let them go ham. You display the account executive or CSM's name. You have tight rules of engagement. And that's where I got with Sixth Sense and Drift, where like we just left the CSM and AE names open and they started reaching out to each other. They just logged an activity. So we tracked all of it and I didn't even touch any of those intros. So that's where you can get. ISVs are best because they have the most overlap. But you'll notice when you're doing that 360 mapping, where I'm sitting down with Scott, the account executive, Some of the best partner relationships will be agency or they will be SI. And what we're doing on a monthly basis is we're choosing which of those accounts are Nearbound accounts, right? They're going to have a partner attached to them. Your top 20, right? Or 33, whatever. And guess what? Here's how you make the math simple. Scott, I imagine the people that you teach in the partner school, everyone's trying to get to a number, right? It's some percentage of revenue, right? Like your partner program's goal is typically not just build a good partner program. It's to drive what? You know, 25% partner revenue, 33%, 50% partner revenue. That's what these businesses are trying to get, right? Okay, let me make this dumb simple for your CRO conversations. How can you possibly get to that number unless a corresponding number of accounts that are assigned to account executives equal that revenue target? So let's say you want one third outbound, one third inbound, one third nearbound. Should not one third of all accounts that are assigned to account executives be nearbound accounts where that rep is committed to working with a partner to break into pipeline or accelerate pipeline? This is math, not magic. I don't see account executives pulling rabbits out of hats, especially not in 2023. If you want production and output, the input has to match. It's that simple. And though that's how Nearbound is changing CROs from going, I don't understand this crazy partner motion, to like, oh, we just need to sit down and choose which accounts are best fit for partners and the type of messaging and emails. Okay, this partner needs to go through you because they're still early. Oh, this partner is very mature. The AE can connect directly with the CSM. Great. You're just building the motion. You're building the sales motion around Nearbound.
You know, and you've talked about the availability of partner data from tools like Crossbeam and Reveal as being kind of central to this new movement, to this
requires,
new...
right? Like, that's what made me go, holy crap, all of this partnering stuff changes. Like, it's different than PRM. So yeah, it that's for me personally, going through not having networks data to having network data, I went, this can change everything.
Yeah. Well, let's get down to the tactics of things. Like, what do you think is going to change, or, you know, what has changed, and what do you think will continue to change on a day-to-day level for a partner manager who wants to start executing Nearbound plays based on the availability of data through tools like Crossbeam and Reveal, or the tools that are coming down the pike that will enable even more sophisticated ways to go about partnerships?
Yeah. So, like, you know, shout out to Rob at Superglue. Like, I think he's doing some cool stuff there that could be very interesting. But I think, you know, what's to come? I'll talk in some first principles here that I think are fundamentally, like, happy to have an argument about, but I believe deeply in the underlying premises, is that all tech is a race to the bottom of the stack. What do I mean by that? Any workflow application that has a light UI, right? If it's wildly successful, it wants to work its way further and further and further down the stack, you know, from workflow to application layer to, or let's say application layer to workflow to data to like infrastructure, right? So some of the fastest growing companies of all time are what? Well, AWS, right? Snowflake, right? Like you, there's a big miss for like a, you know, Salesforce to miss out on like the Snowflake opportunity, right? They're like, ah, shoot, another abstraction layer of data got built underneath us, right? And technically, if you have everything set up on Snowflake, you could replace and replatform Salesforce with Dynamics or with HubSpot, just as an example, right? So all tech is a race down to the bottom of the stack. What does that mean? Is that if you actually change the bottom data layer, everything that's built on top of it, the workflows and the application layers can fundamentally change. So for example, let's just do Nearbound GTM, which is marketing, sales, and then success. Let's talk about how each of those buckets can change due to this technological shift. When it comes to marketing, what is marketing? Well, either you have your list, which is your known contacts that have converted through some mechanism. Right. So through an ebook, a webinar, a white paper, a blog post, a podcast following, a newsletter, whatever those things are, it's your known list of tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of contacts. And then you build lists, right? So not all contacts in that database are treated equally by the marketing organization. Some are top of funnel, some are mid, some are bottom, right? Some are customers, right? Where you do customer marketing versus, you know, top of funnel awareness versus more buying intent, middle of funnel. Let me ask you a question. Knowing what technologies or what service providers or what partner relationships exist and overlap against that contact database, does that change how some of those lists should be created? Yeah, of course it does. Like if you have a top target list of accounts, what is informing that top target list of accounts for marketing? Like this is a conversation you should go have with your CMO. What is informing the top 1,000 accounts that are most important to you? Most B2B now has some semblance of ABM, if nothing else, just accounts, right? First rule of sales is no one cares about your product. Second rule of sales is target accounts, sell to people. Okay, so which accounts? How is marketing answering that question? Which accounts are we targeting? It would be very dumb of me to not overlap that assumption or use that data to inform what are our target accounts. I mean, do we not have the data on our side? Can they say that like this firmographic information, company size or persona information, title, role, seniority, geo, like any of these other considerations are important, right? You don't want to sell a 10-person mom and pop shop if you're selling a solution for a 2,000-person company. But knowing what technology they use, what partner relationships they have, like, it's not just me. I know that if I look at any person's data that has actually done a volume of partner sales, what are we going to see, Scott? Do the partner deals close faster or slower than the non-partner deals?
Faster.
Faster, typically, right? And do they win at a higher rate or a lower rate than non-partner deals?
Higher.
Higher rate. Okay, so then what other vector do I have to look at that typically has a 2x, right? So I typically see about a 2x increase in deal velocity and a 2x increase in win rate. What other vector does marketing have where they can get a double? I don't know. I'm not aware of one. Is your CMO? So that's how this data can change marketing. Not just the tactics and which partners to do things with, but the target account list themselves. And then you do your campaign planning. Okay, what stuff are we doing around marketing? Well, here's our big message. Well, what other partners have an audience that already believe that message, right? Like, so then we're talking about, okay, that content needs to have a partner attached. Okay, this event we were going to do on this InfoSec, you know, hot topic that everyone's talking about, we should definitely do it with these 10 partners that have this overlap here. All of a sudden it changes the campaigns where you're thinking, okay, I need to have partners attached, right? Nearbound marketing to at least what? Again, if it's the numbers 33% partner revenue, that means that 33% of your marketing activity should have partners attached, period. Period. We already know that they convert better and they convert faster. So like that ask is minimum commit table stakes for you now as a partner executive. If you cannot get commitment to the revenue number that you're supposed to contribute to from marketing, that they should have a corresponding amount of activities on a percentage basis, you're fucked. I'm not kidding. I use that. I've always spoke this passionately, but I mean it honestly. You are in a bad spot and you need to get out of that situation ASAP. That's nearbound marketing. You have a revenue target. What percentage of marketing activities have partners attached? You need to get to that same percentage. And then we go to sales, right? How you got a 100 target accounts, Scott. Well, which ones you prioritize? We can go through that for success teams too, where we're just thinking about that list. What percentage of revenue is partner supposed to drive? And then what percentage of activities am I adding in each bucket?
Have you found any companies or CEOs that are engineer bound? And if so, like how does your average partner leader get a company over the hump? Or is your recommendation just get out of there? If they're not already aligned and not seeing the light, then find a new job.
I think that's why this conversation is so powerful though. Like this is the conversation that you need to have. That's why I'm speaking so much to you about is I think it's how you go win those conversations and align to the thing that they probably hired you for in the first place. They just didn't know how to articulate it. There aren't a ton of great role models out there. And the role models that are out there look so different than your business. Let's say, for example, HubSpot, right? HubSpot's one of my favorite examples on how to do this right from startup to publicly traded company. But it's so hard to look at HubSpot and be like, how do I do that, right? Like, it doesn't make sense where they're at and where you're at. So I think that centering around nearbound is that A, it's positioning. That's sales. It's marketing. Like you need to sell your internal company on doing things your way. You need to lead, right? You need to have conviction in your words and be willing to risk. I say that very intentionally. Most people that are unwilling to call their shot are not willing to risk. They're like, I have all of these partner relationships out here. And maybe something good will happen. Like a big deal will fall out of the cracks. We'll win this thing. We'll have some influence here. And what you're doing is you're closing off the opportunity to actually call your shot and go, you know what? We've recruited 150 partners. our top 35 are solid. That means that the 35, we need to get them involved in a core, like if we're trying to go from 10% partner revenue to 20%. Marketing next quarter, we're planning right now today on how we do 20% of all of our marketing activities with partners. This is a face-to-face conversation you're going to have with your CMO. And then you're going to have a face-to-face conversation with your CRO. 20% of all sales activities will have a partner attached. If they're not willing to commit to that, that's your battle to fight. And if you can't win it in a quarter, you're screwed. It could be your company's fault, but it could be your fault. My point is that you're going to have to take that accountability one way or the other. Either your program's going to die, or you're going to start operating with a nearbound mindset.
And let's take it down a level to partner attach, right? That word has come up a lot. Let's describe, what does that actually mean? And for companies or the CMOs, CROs who are not aligned with that, what does it take to get partners attached to opportunities?
What does it take to get partners attached? I think this is where people will appreciate the distinction between, you know, the totality of partnerships or whatever. Like you'll probably see, hopefully there's some people on here that were at Supernode or were there. Partner Hacker, I actually joined the ELG Alliance that Crossbeam announced. And you're like, why would you join? I thought Nearbound, this is the thing. You still need to recruit great partners, right? So you need to like be able to build a great partnership with someone either at a service level and showing an agency how they can make money around delivering your solution or make their clients wildly happy to be in their stack or recommend it. And you need to produce, you know, ISV or tech integration partners that have some joint value and maybe some co-innovation. Or you need to have on top of both of those, or in addition to co-marketing partners that are great to do content, social events with, that generate more, you know, partner-oriented pipelines. So you need to have these things already set up. That's not to take away from the job of the partner pro to go do those things. But what I've seen, and the thing that's made me so sick over the past 5-6 years, where I've really been focused on partnerships and alignments with sales and marketing, is when great partner people do that, and then they're not able to translate it into revenue. That sucks. That hurts so bad to go sink 2-3 years of your life into building these relationships and helping people out and setting up these great partnerships. And then you're like, I just can't get sales to figure this out. And it's because you have all of the commitment, all of the responsibility, right? And all of the liability, and your sales organization has zero. The point is that if you want me to own 10% of revenue, 20% of revenue, that's fantastic. I'm going to go build a fucking great partner ecosystem. I'm going to help all these partners. But guess what that means from you? You're committing that you're doing a corresponding at least 20%, 33% amount of activities. Snip this right here. That's the conversation that you need to go have. And if you're not confident about it, DM me on LinkedIn. I'll help you get confident about it. I'll talk to you and your CMO or your CRO about it, because I promise it's inarguable. I've been having this conversation for the past 6 months, and it's landing like nothing I've ever seen in go-to-market before. I think that's why I'm so passionate about this, is that if you're not having these conversations structured this way, there's no way. And Scott, I just got off a call that was very sad to me, extremely sad. It was a partner person that was like, look, we only have referral partners. What do you mean you only have referral partners? Well, we work our partners to send referrals to us. And then I talked through who their top partners were. And they were all tech companies, by the way, these top partners. And I'm like, so what you're telling me is that you think the account executives and the customer success managers at that company are going to use your referral link in your deal registration portal to proactively send you customers? Net new referrals, yes. But your sales organization is not proactively working accounts. So they might have overlap through that 360 mapping with that very same partner. And that sales rep could reach out very intelligently. Hey, I'm talking to this contact and this contact at this company. Here's where we're at. Here's why I think it's valuable for both of us. What intel do you have on this account that we could kind of share notes on? Them reaching out and doing that activity, you're saying you're not willing to commit to. Well, you know, sales just isn't bought in yet. And I'm like, you're screwed. My advice to them was, is their partner program is going to fail. And it is. It will fail. I would short that company's stock if it was a publicly traded company right now. I would short it because how could they ever get to it? This company had about 250 account executives too, Scott. And they had about 100 integration partners, like maybe 20, 30 agencies, but mostly the integration partners. So their top 20, 30 integration partners is where they got most of it. But they have a 6-person partner team. How are they going to drive 20% of revenue with 6 people? Let's be honest, man. Like, we were never going to make... That program was doomed to fail unless they change. So this is real talk. Like, let's go capture the moment, people. I think Nearbound, that's why I'm so excited about it. It's facilitating the conversations that's making the rest of the team pick up, you know, partners as a go-to-market lever and the most effective and efficient go-to-market lever.
So we've been talking about incorporating Nearbound into organizations that already have established partner programs. What should people who are maybe at earlier stage companies and are establishing a partner motion in their company be thinking about to bring Nearbound thinking into their organization?
That's a great question and distinction too. So like, if you literally have no partner program right now, like Nearbound, I'm probably not speaking to you, right? Like, this is not something you do day one. Like, you need to have a good partnership in place before you start putting, you know, sellers in front of this, but you have to. So a Nearbound mindset can be network, right? It doesn't just have to be partners. Like, you need to imbue this across your culture, across influence in general. So this could be board members. It could be family members. It could be teammates. It could be customers. The episode with Scott Lease, we actually talked just about that. And he was talking about how, like, look, go to market is kind of like go to network. And I'm like, this is crazy. Another framework or word. And he's like, well, my point is just simple. And he's like, it's actually really close to Nearbound, is that sometimes people where you have a relationship are going to have influence and, you know, more control over that buying decision than a formal quote unquote partner, or you might not have a partner relationship yet. That doesn't mean that the effort should stop there. So what's my point? If you don't have a big partner program, start showing how influence and network and proximity to the buyer and understanding of that specific buyer and their needs and their challenges, that intel and information, the answers to the test, is the thing that's most important. That's what's most important, right? Partners, I think, are the biggest vehicle by which to do that, to operationalize that across a company. But it could be, you know, a board member's wife, right? That is also a board member at this other company who has a ton of influence and she's a rock star. And getting that alignment call with her might be like, hey, actually, they're about to fire half their sales team. This thing is going on over here. They just had this other challenge. So if I was you, I would only sell into this business initiative because it's the only thing they care about. Stop acting like all of sales you need to play on hard mode. And I think that's where the Nearbound and the network components could apply more readily to early stage startups, is look at who surrounds that account and don't have so much bias as to who you have to be working with. It could be a person, right? And that's how I would think about it early stage, is that demonstrate how you can influence accounts through their network. And then you can translate that into a partner program and operationalize it and do partner attach at scale.
Can Nearbound be used to help find partners, especially for early partner programs where perhaps there isn't an established relationship with prospective partners and there might be reluctance to share data, right? Crossbeam reveal, the whole concept of kind of automating account mapping is a relatively new thing. Have you found that to be the case? And if so, how do you overcome those challenges?
What I would say is that the data sharing component, the law is clearly established on this. So if you're having an objection, ping me, DM me on LinkedIn, and I'll help you get through this. Because I have gone through this as much as anyone. I mean, I built these partnerships at Drift, so high profile Sequoia backed company with companies like Sixth Sense, Clearbit, Demandbase, ZoomInfo. So these are all data companies. So the nuance of first party data versus third party versus second party data, CCPA, GDPR, and all the rules and regulations, here's what I can promise. Sharing account level metadata across two companies that have a formal partnership where they are both security compliant does not violate any GDPR, CCPA, or personally identifiable information, PII, regulations. So like, there is no actual block to doing this, provided you do not have a specific provision in your accounts that you cannot share it with approved partners and vendors. So like, if you're in a big company that are just investing in partnerships, you might need to go talk to legal and get your MSA adjusted that you can share, you know, let's call it second party data with approved partners and vendors, right? So presumably any vendor that has access to your CRM has shared information. So it's no different than bringing on a vendor that has access to CRM. It's technically not any different because you're not sharing any contact level details.
I suppose a lot of times the blockage is less on a legal regulatory standpoint and more just like a philosophical basis or just organizational inertia, a new process to implement to incorporate data sharing into a partner discovery call. Have you found
where leadership's needed, Scott, and this is why I'm speaking so passionately about this, is that you cannot be a passive participant to this transformation in your company. You have to lead it. So either you're an entrepreneurial partner pro that's going to stake your reputation in your career on helping your organization move from old world go-to-market that is not working. Your team's not hitting their numbers, marketing's not improving, outbound's not improving, your pipeline's missing, and your close one revenue's missing. Are you a passive participant on that ship? Or are you taking up the partner flag and marching to leadership and going, I'm going to help turn this ship around? If it's organizational resistance, what kind of BS excuse is that? Like, you aren't going to have a job there in 6 months. Do you not recognize that, people? You won't. The layoffs are not getting better. They're getting worse. I was just on a call with a brand name company, Scott, that you've heard me talk about. Brand name. They have $80 million cash on hand. It's a platform that I use very frequently. The CRO was fired. The CMO was fired. The CTO was fired. Half of the sales organization was laid off. And I was just talking to them a week and a half ago about how they need to make this shift. And I'm like, how did this just happen? It's continuing to happen. Like, it's not going to get better. And AI is only going to make it worse. Companies are going to have to operate on about one third of their headcount that they currently operate with. This problem is going to compound. So like, if you're saying things to me like organizational resistance, that means that in the three C's, curiosity, courage, and conviction, people that change the world or change their company, they have a lot of conviction. At minimum, they have a little bit of courage. But if you're just curious, you're just a passive participant. It takes change. It's going to take leadership, and that's hard. But that's the reality. You have to go change these people's minds and say, like, you know, I'm damn glad that I have Scott Pollock in the boat with me to figure out this partner thing, because he has a lot of conviction on how we're going to do this and a lot of, you know, roadmap and tactically, like, how we're going to make it happen. So I've often said, Scott, that, like, if I'm not the most persuasive person in the room, I will be the most persistent. You know, like, you better be persistent on this. You better get in front of executives and tell them the way that it needs to be and figure out how to make that happen, or you can't make an impact at that organization.
I would say, no doubt you are certainly one of the most passionate, and I personally appreciate that. As someone who's been, you know, waving a flag of partnerships for a long time, it's great to hear the kind of excitement in your voice and the people rallying behind it, because I think that is the movement exactly that is.
Like, you have to believe what I'm talking about to go change other people's minds. Because why? So these are hard conversations, Scott. You know these are hard. You've been in that. You've been in them. They're not fun. But guess what also is not fun? Passively losing week over week, taking punch after punch to the face and being the third wheel, right? Or third rail. Like, no one can touch partnerships. It's this siloed thing. Like, you know what I'll take every day? Hard choices, easy life. Not easy choices and a hard life. And that's often what partner people are doing, is they're making easy choices. They're allowing the probabilities that exist out in their ecosystem to play out, and maybe something great will fall out. But they're not making hard choices and saying, I'm putting my line in the sand. We have activated partners that are ready. We can attach them to the corresponding number of marketing, sales, and success activities. We're not moving forward until we get agreement on these things. Now, you might ask, how? Great. Now we're talking about the things we should have been talking about all along. We have to agree on the level of output that we want has to be met with the level of input. Period. Can we agree on that, executive team? Again, this is math, not magic. If we cannot agree on that, I will be blowing us up on that every day or every week until we do. And then asking the question, well, how would we do that? That's what I've been trying to talk to you about all along, right? Like, that's the point, is once you get the buy-in, and then now you're talking tactics. Okay, how do we do this with marketing? Great. Now we're committed that 20% of partners must be attached to all marketing campaigns. Hell yeah. What a refreshing conversation after you've got past the hard one.
Yeah. Jared, I love it. For those who want to know, where do we go from here? A couple of next steps here, but I want to ask you, people who want to continue to follow you and the Nearbound movement, how should they follow that?
Just hit me up on LinkedIn. So Jared Fuller. Sign up at partnerhacker.com for, we send out Partner Hacker Daily. It's the number one red newsletter in partnerships. We have 10,000 plus members. And it's a delightfully simple little mini PhD in partnerships every day. I was just at a conference last week where an executive at a publicly traded company said that they read it every single morning before they wake up their kids. So I'm like, hey, it's that little bit
of a right line
in your inbox every day. So sign up at partnerhacker.com. Hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to help. I'm pathologically helpful, meaning you shoot me a DM. I'm happy to help.
Awesome, Jared. Thank you. And now class is over, but you might be wondering, beyond continuing to follow Jared and subscribing to the Partner Hacker Daily, where do I go from here? So I want to share one more thing, which is if you want more of this, if you feel like you're navigating this universe alone, we've got more. And as you can see from today's session and all the other Partner School events that we've hosted, there is an infinite and an increasing complexity in partnership. There's new language, there's new concepts. It can frankly make your head spin. And there are also dozens of tactics and strategies that you need in order to be successful as a modern partnerships leader. And frankly, it takes most people 10 years at least to figure things out and also to get comfortable and confident in the role. And so you know, during that trial and error, you know, period, you can feel like you're figuring things out for yourself. So you might be asking yourself, where do I go if I don't have 10 years of my career to spare? What do I do if I don't want to feel uncertain and unconfident as I navigate that career? How do I start learning and growing and creating progress right now? No, if that is what you are wondering, let me tell you about something that we built at Furneaux that could help. It's called the Certified Partnerships Professional Program, and it's an 8-week interactive experience for emerging partnership leaders. So if you feel like you are still trying to connect the dots between all the many, many skills needed, the many activities that you need to do to be effective at partnerships and build effective, impactful partnerships, this is the program for you.